Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is Managing Editor James Kleiman to talk about how loan officers are playing the long game while mortgage rates are still over 7%. James, welcome back to the podcast.
Good to be back.
Great to have you back on. And we are talking about something that I think is so top of mind for everyone in our industry. And it's kind of like in the middle of the high rates that we're seeing. How are LOs dealing with that? What are they doing? Were they expecting rates to fall? We had a pretty sunny outlook when it was in December. March has, has shown us to have a different economic reality. So I'd love to dig into this based on the reporting of your newsroom.
Yeah, so I assigned a piece to Connie Kim. She's a mortgage reporter at Housing Wire. And I wanted to think back to early December. I remember talking about this with my family members and friends who are, as the tagline goes, bored to tears, hearing about me talk about mortgage rates and MBS movements and all that. And I was telling them, look, rates are back down into the low sixes, low to mid sixes, depending on the borrower profile and a million other factors, right? But they're dramatically down. We touched right about 8% at one point in time, right? I mean, it was really, really pretty stark a contrast. And at the time in early December, as the holidays were coming into focus, there were a lot of originators out there who were really optimistic and felt like this is a sign that perhaps we've turned the corner and that all the economic data that has come through and the Fed's reading of the economic data would result in rate cuts coming pretty soon thereafter, right? There were a lot of people who thought we might even see rate cuts this month in March. Almost certainly not going to happen at this point. As we know, Jerome Powell gets on TV and says, oh, I don't know. We got to be really careful. And suddenly the market goes, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no. And now we're looking at potentially two, three rate cuts. I've seen some outlooks that call for zero, right? Like Apollo Global, a major, major, major investment fund, thinks that there will be zero rate cuts. Maybe they're just being contrarian to get eyeballs. I don't know. But there is certainly a very different tone. There's a very different expectation from when we talked in December about what 2024 would look like. A lot of people said this would be potentially a recovery year. Now, I think that conversation has shifted and it's okay, we've learned a lot of lessons from 2023. How is 2024 shaping up? And so I asked Connie to talk to originators to talk about where their expectations were, how they're talking to clients, what kind of conversations they're having, and really how do they model their business moving forward with the expectation that we probably won't see major changes in rate movements, that we're probably going to continue to see somewhere in the range of, let's say, 6.5 to 7.5, right? Somewhere in that band. And I think that's a pretty reasonable expectation. And naturally, you get 10 LOs in a room. It's like what, four out of five dentists, like that. They all kind of have different takes and different expectations. And despite them largely all selling similar or the same products, they all take very different approaches to it. And so we wanted to focus on some strong performers. We didn't want to focus on the LOs who did one loan in the last 6 months and are probably going to be driving an Uber next month. So I asked Connie to talk to people that we reasonably expect are going to stick around through this cycle. And I think my takeaway, having read her story, is that a lot of these loan officers, they're weathering these industry headwinds. They didn't expect a significant drop in mortgage rates in the first place. And so they weren't the people in December, in early December, saying, oh, now they're at 6.2%. And I got to change what I'm doing. I need to talk to these people who maybe were on the fence. the situation probably didn't change all that much for those people after, you know, we got to mid to late January and rates had skyrocketed back up again, right? So I think they're being a little bit more strategic, being less reactive to the market. And, you know, the refinance boom lasted 3 years. So why would the higher rate environment not last probably a similar period of time? And I think when you also look at the LO landscape, we've already seen more than 100,000 LOs wash out. So those who are still in the business, who are hustling every day and who are trying to nail pre-approvals and going to open houses even and doing some of the basics, these are the people that you'd hope would stick in the industry in the first place, right? And so there is sort of a, you know, a bias towards success here. But I will say that most of them are not thinking reactively about mortgage rates. They're thinking about buyer education and nurturing these leads and making sure that every week or two, they're contacting the client who has been pre-approved, who's maybe waiting for the right house to come on the market, or who's waiting for another buyer to drop out, you know, because of an inspection or whatever the opportunity might be in that particular situation. They're ready. They've been nurturing the lead. And I think that to me is the biggest takeaway, because there are really two different types of home buyers out there right now.
Right. You have the home buyers, the baby boomers who don't even need a mortgage, right? And then you have people who, you know, are going to need a mortgage. And, you know, one of the things that Connie uncovered was like, hey, there are people absolutely willing to trade in their lower rate right now, because they're like, well, you know, rates will come down, right? There'll be a refinance. So if I really need it, I'm going to do that.
Yeah. And look, I don't think anyone out there is deluded enough to think that a 2-point-something% mortgage rate is going to come back in the next cycle, certainly not in the next 5 years. Could it be in the next 10, 15 years? Yeah, I wouldn't bet on it, but I do think it's possible. And eventually, I know this has been said before, but people are going to have to start making those life decisions. And even from my own family situation, like, we're renters, we would like to buy something at some point in time. We are having a second child in July. Maybe not in our particular case, but in most people like that, having a big life event like a new child means you need to really rethink some of your living space arrangements, right? Like, we're thinking about moving our primary bedroom into like, what is a sunroom, you know, like a quasi office, without, you know, having to downsize a bed size and, you know, do all these crazy things. And a lot of other people would say, you know, actually, this is the time that I should be looking at the house. And even if I do have a 2.6% rate, well, what's the point if I'm miserable living in the place that I'm in, or if it doesn't fit the needs of my family at that point in time? And so, you know, I think you're going to see some movement from those life decisions. I don't think you're going to see a tremendous amount of movement from the boomers, who have been pretty, pretty determined to stay in their homes and make changes in some cases. You know, maybe there's a bedroom on the main floor instead of having to go up or downstairs, right? But they're not leaving. They're not going to be moving. You're really going to have to wait until they have a life, or, you know, morbidly a death event, right? But you will see, I think, a lot more transactions in the Gen X millennial bracket. And that's certainly something that Connie does touch on in the reporting, that there are, let me give an example. So she talks to a guy named Cash Sagafi, and he's a loan officer at Liberty Home Mortgage Corporation. And he says, what's changed about the first-time home buyer is that they no longer expect to get mortgage rates in the 4% range as they did during the pandemic years. And one of his buyers decided to pull the trigger to move into a bigger house by selling their current home, which had a 2.375% mortgage rate. I mean, that's crazy. I haven't seen one of those in the wild in a long time, unless it was like a 15-year or, you know, a 10 or something. But anyway, the couple was quoted a 7% mortgage on a $500,000 3-bedroom home in early March. They decided to go ahead and make the purchase because they feel like they can still refinance down the road when mortgage rates fall. And he says, this is Sagafi, he says, What I tell all loan officers, no matter who I talk to, is that there is no foreclosure crisis coming on the horizon. And for that reason, real estate prices are only going in one direction, and that's up. So whatever you're looking at today, it's going to be more expensive 12 months from now. And I think that's a really important point to touch on. And I know you talked to Mike Simonson at Altos and Logan. They pay very close attention to the inventory levels. And although inventory is up a little bit, home prices are only going to continue to grow. And it's especially true in some areas more than others. We recently did a Data Digest on San Diego, and there's no inventory. I mean, it's shocking. They're at like one-fifth the levels they were at even a couple years ago. And so when you have a place as large as San Diego, geographically speaking, and you have inventory as limited as it is, well, scarcity effect, right? So prices are just going to skyrocket. And, you know, I mean, I'll speak for myself here. I wouldn't turn down San Diego. That seems like a pretty nice place to live, right?
I love San Diego.
Yeah. Oh. Awesome spot. So, right. It's desirable. They're not making more of it. And that means, yes, the rate is important, but you're not going to get a deal by waiting for a credit or a foreclosure crisis that will affect others, because it's not going to happen.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think that's one of the really interesting things about this market. Typically, when you have high mortgage rates, right, your home prices go down. I mean, there's an affordability balance there, and there's just no balance here because there's no inventory. And so I think your loan officers who said that are absolutely right. You know, if you're talking to borrowers, it's like, if you're waiting for prices to come down, when is that going to happen? Realistically, if you're in a super hot market, something like Austin cooled off, but it's still not like prices are crashing or even falling. They're cooling off. The rate of growth is down. Those are just a very few markets. We've seen, what was it? Boston. We did just a couple weeks ago, we did, you know, Boston was the hottest market in the country. And you know, good luck. I mean, prices aren't coming down in most places in the U.S.
So we looked at two different MSAs in the Boston area. And so I'm not from the area, but one part of it is more of sort of the Providence, Rhode Island, like southern, you know, kind of Boston area. And then the other segment is the North Shore and southern New Hampshire. And two of those three markets were the hottest in the country. So Boston is just absolutely, and famously, Massachusetts has built basically nothing when it comes to housing, especially around the Boston area, in decades. And that's going to catch up. Like you just can't fix these problems in a couple years. It's going to take many years of actually building housing for this to level off. And that's frustrating. But even when we talk about places like Austin, right, it's sort of known as, oh, well, okay, Austin's the only city in America or the only MSA that's really bucking this trend in pricing. They're still up like 29% from the pandemic. So, you know, if you were someone who was looking in 2019 and decided to put it off until now, it's not like you're getting a better deal. It's just, it went from very crazy to moderately crazy.
Yep.
Right. And that's not a dynamic.
No, I have relatives, my in-laws, some of my kids' in-laws have been wanting to move to Austin for a couple of years. And, you know, some things didn't work out a couple years ago. And now they're, you know, just kicking themselves. They're like, oh my gosh, because it's not like it's, you know, significantly better. It's just not as unaffordable as, you know, in the direction it was going. So I think that's a really good point. And I think that, you know, something that Logan and I talk about is the demographics. And like you said, with Boston, it's like, I mean, we have this demographic wave of millennials, and then you've got Gen Z coming up after them, and they're a pretty big cohort. And yet you haven't built any new housing.
Let's talk a little bit more about Boston from the Yellow perspective. So I know someone who's a top originator. She and her husband are at Fairway. They're really, really good, very skilled. They've been in the business for a long time. They're going to survive this market cycle because they're top talents. They have a very different reality than the LOs in most places in America. And so in most places, when you get a prospective borrower who comes to you, whether it's through a real estate agent or maybe it's a past client or a referral of some sort, you're probably looking at the timeline for working with that client months, you know, like maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 months, maybe, you know, like, but generally speaking, it's a fairly compressed timeline because they're already coming to you. They've probably identified a home or have a list, you know, a list of 4 to 5 homes that they're potentially making a bid on or they're at least interested in. And you kind of know what it looks like. That's not the case in Boston. So these LOs told me a couple months back, they spend years on a single client because the likelihood of them being able to compete with others in biotech and lawyers and software developers and academics. And, you know, it's a pretty expensive market with a lot of very successful people. And some of it is luck and some of it is skill. And there's just not many homes that come on the market and you're competing against 30, 40, 50, 60 people in some cases, right? So that means that you have to really tend those relationships. And so if you're an LO, your business looks radically different because a lot of LOs think about their business in the sense of the like what's in their pipeline. And if you're in Boston and if you're one of these two people I described, like you might actually have a massive pipeline, but the likelihood of any of those deals closing in the next 3 months is not great. So it presents so many different challenges, and it means that they really need to be working very hard to build out their referral network consistently, even though, I mean, these are excellent loan officers in a top market with high loan values too, right? So it's really tough, and I think that looks very different than when you go to an area that, say, you know, in the Carolinas, parts of the Sun Belt, where there's a lot more new builds, right? And if you're a loan officer, 1/3 of the stock is going to be new builds. And unless you have a JV or you have some sort of an in, that's probably not going to be, you know, a market that you can break into. And so your strategy has to be totally different. And you're dealing with people who are looking at different products, different types of houses, right? So it's a difficult time. And everybody is sensitive about rates to an extent. But the question now, I think, is at what point are those either move-up buyers saying, okay, I had my second kid, I need to make changes, or are there new, you know, first-time home buyers who are just saying, okay, we know that there's no 3% mortgage rate coming in the next 5 years. Like, we find a house, we can afford it, we do it, we hope that we refi 3 years.
I mean, something we hear from real estate agents, which people either love or hate this, is like, marry the house, date the rate.
I hate it.
I know you do. I was just at a real estate event last week and someone said that actually. So, but I think what's behind that is what we've been talking about. I think the other thing is when we knew that coming off that refi boom, you know, we're going into a purchase market, the kind of loan officers that were going to survive were going to be much different. You know, lenders had to hire a ton of people to handle that refi volume. Those are not the same kind of people that we see by and large, like your friends or the people that you know in Boston who are really succeeding in this market, because this is the long game and it's about relationships and it's about a totally different, you know, lens and a way of doing business than say if you got hired during the refi boom and that's your first exposure. I don't know where you are now.
So you're not in the business at this point. The short answer is if you were hired as a refi call center loan officer doing consumer direct, getting a lead on your screen, calling them, hoping, you know, that you can get, I don't know, 75 bips on it, 100 bips on whatever it is. You're not, unless you have a unique social network or a mentor who took you under their wing or some pretty rare series of skills, you are probably working in a different field right now. It's just very unlikely, because doing purchase loans is developing relationships and knowing how to troubleshoot, and so much more can go wrong in a purchase transaction. This is not to say that refis don't have their hiccups or challenges that come through, but I think the stakes are a lot lower and the skill required is not as great. It's tough if you don't know how to also deal with people who are under pressure and, you know, real estate agents who are sometimes good at their job, sometimes not good at their job, sometimes good at some parts of the job, but not others. And you don't know that until if you can't troubleshoot and really reassure people and care, like actually give a crap. I think that's going to be really difficult to overcome. And everything that I can tell from all the data that we have from Ingenious and other sources suggests that it's the call center operators who washed out many moons ago, who were among the first sales staff that were cut in most of these places. And even, you know, let me give you one example of something even a little bit different that I think is pretty interesting. I broke a story about a week ago about Rocket Mortgage, obviously a massive lender. They have their own in-house bankers. A lot of them are really skilled. They've been in this business for 10, 15, 20 years. They know how to navigate so many different parts of the loan process. But Rocket also has, as part of their overall business, they had an option where they would license non-LO financial professionals. So real estate agents, insurance agents, accountants, they could hang their license with Rocket and they could originate mortgage loans, you know, through Rocket. And some of them did. And Rocket recently shut that down. They didn't provide a whole lot of details as to why. They want to focus on mortgage brokers in the TPO channel, which is the vast majority of the business. I think it comes down to a couple different factors here, though, and I'm just spitballing. So, you know, don't take my word for it, but I think I have a pretty good handle on it. It's so difficult to transition from being a real estate agent and knowing the mechanics of that part of the deal with disclosures and negotiations to knowing the ins and outs of different loan programs and spotting a problem and fixing it and knowing where to turn when a deal isn't going perfectly. And I just don't think there are a lot of real estate agents out there who are good at both in equal measure, and that is enough of a value proposition for a consumer to say, yeah, I'll work with you and I'm not worried about cross wires or issues or you not being competent at this part, because the financing is a pretty significant part of the deal, right? And so Rocket pretty quietly sunset this program that also, by the way, a lot of the mortgage brokers they worked with did not like, because they were competing against some of their own referral partners with the same lender that they're working with. And they're kind of like, wait a second, like, whose side are you on? Are you trying to help me or are you trying to help them? Like, you know, and look, there's always going to be some tension in the broker space, just because the nature of it is very competitive, right? So I do want to state that I think Rocket probably had very good reasons. And the biggest reason is that it wasn't financially paying off. And that's why they decided that this is just something that they're not going to do going forward. But it is pretty interesting that, again, these are not, in most cases, I would imagine, skilled loan officers who are able to handle lots of different types of loan scenarios. And they're gone. They're done.
And to your point, you know, non-QM is ramping up. But even if it's a qualified mortgage, I mean, you just have to do so much more work. I mean, there's so much more to it than, you know, maybe in a normal market. So one of the things that I think Connie did a good job was talking to people who said this very thing. This, their referral partners, that they're working closer than ever. You know, she talked to a lender who was talking about, hey, you know, go really be proactive with your real estate partners. And you can imagine that right now, those relationships are more important than ever. It's one of the reasons, I mean, here's a shameless plug, but it's true, is that at the gathering, which is April 21st through 24th in Scottsdale, we're bringing together, you know, what we call the full picture, which is real estate professionals and mortgage professionals, because we feel like there's so much to be gained by having some overlap there, by having those relationships, by understanding what is happening on the other side. I mean, commission lawsuits is a great example of like something that's going to affect both sides. But on the realtor side, it's like, listen, you need to understand what's happening with your lender partners. So anyway, that is a shameless plug, but it's one I totally believe in. I know you are working, I'm working with our panels that we're going to be doing and talking to people. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because on both sides, there's a big opportunity going forward as both industries are consolidating. And so if you subscribe to the Commission Impossible thesis put forth by Ryan Tomasello at KBW, who I believe is going to be there at the gathering, really sharp guy. He's worth listening to. We're going to see 500,000 real estate agents wash out in the next couple of years if, you know, it does come to pass that that these commission lawsuits really do change how brokers and agents get paid. And I think that means, so one, you have to think about how many of your referral partners are going to be in that 500,000, right? And then on the other side of it, if you're an agent and you are among the professionals who is doing well and you're grabbing market share, you are also going to want to work with top tier professionals on the lending side who are doing the same thing, who are grabbing market share. And so one thing that I find really encouraging about the market right now is Connie even spoke to a guy named Michael Clark. He's a VP at Primary Residential Mortgage. And he told her, look, there's no secret to grabbing market share. It's just really about doing outbound sales activities, you know, addressing the agent's fears and adding good value. And he said, it all comes down to helping the agents. They're sending you buyers, market their listings, go to the listings. You do so, you add value, you're boosting their marketing efforts, you're getting them contracts. Even if you don't write a loan on that home, that's the kind of thing people remember. And when they see that effort, they're more likely to send you buyers. They're more likely to refer you to other agents in their sphere through word of mouth. You might even pick up some clients at an open house. And so he has 73 originators. They're across the East Coast. They funded $81 million in loans in January of 2024. That was up 35% from January 2023. And more than 20 of his LOs had a production volume of $1 million or more. And 10 of them hit $2 million plus. And a lot of these guys, he told Connie, they weren't doing that much volume even in 2019. And so, again, I don't want to make it seem like this is the norm, that everyone is in this camp, but I do think it illustrates that if you're successful and if you think about the business as a client-focused servicing business, I think you're going to do much better, because at the end of the day, if you work hard for people, you're competent, you know the programs, and you really do your darndest to get them the best loan and give them an amazing experience and help the real estate agent out, you are going to get referral business. It is going to come around, because I got to tell you, a lot of people just don't do that. They get complacent, or they're too stressed, or they're not good enough. They haven't read up on the loan program. They miss something. Underwriting caught it. They get some egg on their face. It was an okay experience, but is the real estate agent going to recommend them next time? Maybe, maybe not. Is the client going to tell their friends and family, oh, you got to use James next time? Well, no, James screwed up, right? Like, you know, you only get so many opportunities to impress people.
I think that's such a good point. And really just, I encourage everyone, go read this story. It should be up by the time that this comes out. James, thanks for being on today. Thanks for running through this. It really is the theme that we see, that like in any market, there are winners and there are people out there doing the business, even at, you know, 7%+ rates. So thanks for digging in there and giving us some insight. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. And final thing, I'm going to be in Cleveland, Ohio, March 12th through 14th with my reporting partner, Flavia Furlan-Yunus. And we're going to be hopefully meeting a bunch of people. So if you want to meet up, grab a beer with me or a coffee or something, please let me know. I'm at james@hwmedia.com and I'm on LinkedIn as well. Love to meet up.
Love that. We love meeting our readers, our audience, our sources. It's amazing. So James, thanks for being on.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.